my bags packed, I'm on a roll. I'm heading out there, and I'm ready to go. Look at
Amateur Traveler, episode 127. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks to David Brody from the Travel in 10 podcast about his trip to Cambodia. Learn about the joys, surprises, and challenges of traveling to both Angkor Wat and Phnom Penh. Today on the Amateur Traveler. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into the interview today, I do have one news story for you. And this one came as a bit of a surprise to me. It's a personal story. As you know, in the past, I have recommended rather highly the Hotwire.com site for finding a cheap hotel room. It's a similar site to Priceline, but unlike that auction-based site, Hotwire will tell you a description of the hotel and then also a price. It won't tell you what hotel, but it'll say it's $50 and it's a two-star hotel or something like that. And it's often very cheap. We've stayed in four-star hotels for something like $60, $70 a night down near UCLA, for instance, in the Beverly Hills area. So it can be a very good site. One thing I ran into, though, last weekend is we ended up paying for another hotel room because we couldn't stay in the Hotwire room because they are prepaid, and it turns out they had sent in a reservation that, according to Travelodge, which is where we ended up, was for a smoking room. Well, we didn't reserve a smoking room. My wife, who has a keen sense of smell, can't stay in a room that reeks of smoke. And it turns out that their policy, as I was aware, is that they reserve not a smoking nor a non-smoking room. But it might be that the hotel has only reserved for them smoking rooms. And since you pay for the room before you find that out, you may end up staying in a room that is unacceptable if you're either a smoker who won't stay in a non-smoking room or a non-smoker who won't stay in a smoking room. And after talking to somebody on the phone from their support staff, they actually said and pointed to me a place on their website where they recommend if that is something that describes you, you shouldn't use their service. So I did want to bring that to your attention, especially since I have in the past recommended Hotwire so highly, and this is something that came as a surprise to me. You can find a link to the details in that story at the show notes at amateurtraveler.com, or just go directly to my tripinator.com blog where I have the longer version of that story. I'd like to welcome the show Dave Brody. Dave has come to talk to us about Cambodia. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Chris.
And I had the oddest thing when Dave and I started talking. I didn't realize when Dave and I arranged for him to be on the show that you were another podcaster, Dave, and I recognized your voice. So why don't you tell us what your show is?
I do a show called Travel in 10, which is basically sort of brief 10-minute clips of different destinations around the world, quite a bit from Southeast Asia, a place where I've traveled a fair bit through, and now starting to put up some more clips from Europe and North America as well, and a mix of sort of video shows and audio shows as well.
That's great. So Cambodia, you were in Cambodia how recently?
I guess it was about 2006, mid-year, where my wife and I traveled overland from Thailand, from an island called Koh Chang, through into Siem Reap in Cambodia. Spent a couple of weeks there and then some time in Phnom Penh as well.
Why Cambodia, first of all, or why Southeast Asia? Why that particular region?
Southeast Asia is part of the world we had always been fascinated in. I mean, great food in places like Thailand and Vietnam, and we'd had some friends who had traveled there and had great stories to tell. And we also were fortunate in that when we went over there, we had a pile of Starwood points, so had some great hotels to go try and stay out at. And my wife had done some work in the hotel industry as well, so knew some great places we could go check out.
As you look back on the trip now, what really stands out as the highlights?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I suggested Cambodia might be a neat place to talk about, in that Cambodia and Laos were probably two of the countries that, going in and planning our tour around Southeast Asia, we were most apprehensive about going to, just because both places that have had history of sort of civil strife, and you hear of travelers getting into trouble in both countries, and places that we were the most apprehensive to go, and I would say both of them ended up being our two favorite destinations. I mean, just fascinating culture and some remarkable stuff to see in both.
And what particular moments, days, or sites kind of stand out from there?
Well, certainly Siem Reap, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site in Cambodia. And I mean, it's a place that would compare with the pyramids in Egypt or any of the wonders of the world. Really a remarkable complex. It's about 100 different temples spread out over a 40 or 50 kilometer large area. It's just breathtaking. It's somewhere where you could spend a week just touring the temples there themselves.
Do you know offhand what the age of the temples is? From what time period are they?
They were built in...
This is from the Khmer...
From the Khmer period. The temples were built between the 9th and 14th century AD, sort of at the height of the Khmer civilization.
Okay. Why don't you give us a broad overview of your itinerary in Cambodia first?
Probably the most interesting part was just getting there. We started in a beautiful island resort in Thailand called Koh Chang, and we're trying to figure out the best way to get to Siem Reap, which is really probably the main tourist destination in Cambodia. Mm-hmm. And we really had two options. One was to go back to Bangkok and fly from there, which would have been really inexpensive and an easy way to do it, but it would have taken a fair bit of time to travel back to Bangkok. We also found that there was a sort of backpacker bus that ran back and forth straight from Koh Chang. They would take you onto the ferry on the bus and were supposed to bring us straight through to Siem Reap, and decided to go with that overland option. We were initially told it was going to be about a 6-hour trip, but ended up being about the most grueling 18 hours you can imagine getting there. But,
because...
you know, from there, a whole host of reasons. I mean, one of the things you find in Southeast Asia is that everywhere you go, there's going to be people who primarily work on commissions who are trying to get you to their guest house or their restaurant, and
sure.
sort of middlemen who really just act as translators, but their purpose in being is to get commissions from all these places along the way, and particularly on these backpacker buses is some of the worst. Some of the experiences we had, for example, is we left Koh Chang, and we started off with just the two of us, actually in a brand new air-conditioned car, and everything looked like it was going to be a great trip. And we had asked a number of times, this would be the same car that was going to take us right through to Siem Reap, and were assured all day that it would be. But after about 2 hours, we sort of had driven through the Thai countryside and arrived near the Cambodian border. They stopped at a restaurant where they offloaded us there and tried to unload us onto what was like a would be the type of bus you would normally take from a rental car agency to the airport, sort of those small shuttle
sure.
buses
uh-huh.
that would maybe take 15 people. They probably had about 45 people packed on with no air conditioning,
okay.
no anything. Took everybody's passports, and we were smart enough not to let them take our passports, but if you had turned your passports over to these guys, the price for the visa went from $20 US to $80 US instead.
Oh my goodness.
They would only take you to their own restaurants and their own hotels and things.
And you knew that ahead of time so that you didn't handle your passport? Or?
Well, we had read some things online about other people traveling in on buses from Bangkok and some uh-huh. of the trouble that they had ran into. So we were a bit apprehensive to take one of these buses to begin with, but had negotiated out with the travel agent all day and had paid a fair bit to go on the trip and thought we were getting a bit better deal than what you normally would. But it turned out to be exactly the same uh-huh. sorts of scams that we had read about. But it was terrible. I mean, it was literally what they told us would be a 6-hour trip. It ended up being an 18-hour trip. The countryside that you went through was fascinating to see, but people living in really pretty abject poverty all along the way. Pretty stunning to see being from a Western country. Certainly, you ran into corruption and hassles and stuff all along the way, from the border to everywhere you stop, people trying to change money and things. That it was a challenging day, but the rest of the trip was brilliant. It was horrific. I mean, I would tell anybody who was going, spend the $45 and you're going to have a beautiful flight in from Bangkok on a brand new 737 instead of the 18-hour hellish version that you'll get if you go overland.
Well, but think of the stories
terrible.
You would miss.
That's true. I mean, I'm glad we did it once, but I wouldn't wish it upon my worst enemy. Oh, it was just awful.
So just to put this in context here, it sounds like you're saying that you had great apprehension about going to Cambodia in the first place.
Yes.
And the first 12 hours of your trip kind of lived up to your fears.
Lived up to every expectation we could have. But the moment you arrive in Siem Reap, it is vastly different than the rest of the country. I mean, it's like going from a third world country into this huge UNESCO World Heritage Site surrounded by 5-star hotels and just a completely different world that you're in. It's really quite remarkable the difference between what we traveled through all day and then the final destination that we arrived at.
So you went to Siem Reap. Am I saying that correctly?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
And that, I believe we spent about a week and a half there.
And, oh, wow.
And
okay.
that, I would say, is not enough time. I mean, there's just so much to see and do there that you really do need sort of 7 or 8 days, I would say, to even just get sort of the tip of it. The temples themselves are obviously the main attraction, and those would be worth 5 or 6 days just in and of themselves. But then there's amazing markets there. There's a floating village that you can go visit, remarkable restaurants, just all kinds of things to see and do.
Okay, let's slow it down a bit. My show is longer than yours, so let's go into a little okay. more detail here. So sure. The temples, first of all. So you have the various temples, and I imagine this is one of those places where you can't see all of them, even if you'd stayed for months.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, the most well-known and the largest of them is the Angkor Wat complex itself,
right?
Which really, I mean, you could spend a full day just there. But within a couple of kilometers of that, they've got another temple called the Bion, which you're going to find 2 to 3 meter large faces carved into the stone in sort of 50 or 60 different towers around it. It's just beautiful. It's really interesting. Some of the temples they've really left in their natural condition, so they're all overgrown with trees and things, and it's actually where they filmed some of the Tomb Raider movies, and it looks like you're walking onto the set of Tomb Raider when you walk through there.
Interesting.
In terms of getting to see even some of the temples, what we did, and most people do, is hire a guide for the day. It's very inexpensive. I mean, I think we paid about $10 or $15 US for the day, and that was essentially to have a guide with a tuk-tuk, which is sort of a freewheel motorcycle that you sit in the back in a little carriage, and he's up front on the motorcycle. For $10 or $15, he was with you from 5 or 6 in the morning, which is when you'd want to start, because then you get in and see the sunset, and you're there when it's not quite as hot out. And he'll stay with you right through for the entire day, taking you from temple to temple, telling you about everything there is to see and do while you're there.
Hmm. When you talk about price, you said 5-star hotels around the thing. How expensive is Cambodia at this point?
It is remarkable how inexpensive it is. I mean, you could spend certainly $500, $600 a night on a hotel, but you would find hotels for $40 or $50 a night that were certainly up to 4-star or 5-star standards here in North America with great service. The one we stayed at, we started our first night in a place called the Princess Anchor Hotel, which was a pretty standard hotel. It was very nice, clean, had high-speed internet, and it had a pool, and it had all the amenities, but it was quite plain looking. Mm-hmm. We then moved across the street to a place called the Lotus Anchor the next night, which I think we were paying about $45, $50 a night. It was like a very high-end boutique hotel, brand new hardwood floors, and all the furnishings and things were from Europe. They had a flat-screen TV. You could go in and watch CNN and BBC and stay connected to the world, and had high-speed internet in the room and everything for $40 a night.
Okay. You went from the temples, and then you said the markets were also fascinating. Tell us a little more about the market.
Absolutely. I mean, you've got this huge central market there where you can buy all sorts of different trinkets from across Southeast Asia, but it's also a real sort of working part of the community. It's a vegetable and fruit market, and you see everybody coming in from the countryside with their wares, and it's just a fascinating place to go see in terms of getting a bit of a taste of what Cambodian life is like on a day-to-day basis.
And when you talked about the trinkets, what sort of crafts is Cambodia known for?
Well, a lot of it because you're in the middle of what are some
touristy
of the most
area.
Famous Buddhist temples in the world. A lot of it is that religious iconography, the different Buddha statues and things. And I imagine you have to be a bit cautious with what you're buying as well, because certainly a lot of them look as though they're things that have been taken from some of the local temples, which imagine if you tried to take out of the country, you would run into some trouble on.
Interesting. How large is this area? My understanding is it's quite large, but I don't know how large is large.
I'm just guessing, but I would say sort of 40, 50 kilometer square area that these sort of 100 or so temples are located within. And Siem Reap itself is manageable. You can get around the city quite easily, but it's not a small city. I think there's about 85,000, 95,000 people that live there, and it's growing every day just because there's such an influx of tourists from around the world coming there. I mean, being that for years, you couldn't get access to these sites during the civil war in Cambodia. And now there's tremendous interest, particularly amongst tourists throughout Asia, who are coming to see the temple. So you're getting an influx of people from the countryside moving into Siem Reap now to take advantage of that.
And then you also mentioned a floating village.
And I'm trying to recall how far outside of the city it was, where you could go out on the rivers and see floating markets and houses and schools and all sorts of things.
Floating on the river, lake?
It was both, actually, a large lake then that connects into a river.
Okay. What was the biggest surprise for the trip?
I guess the biggest surprise was just once you got over that overland trip, which was challenging, how developed it was and how easy it was to travel in Siem Reap itself was just really so much different than the rest of Cambodia. And the other thing was the food was remarkable. I mean, you always hear of Thai food and Vietnamese food here in North America. You don't hear a lot about Cambodian food. And it was some of the best food we had anywhere in Asia.
We actually have a lovely Cambodian restaurant right here in our area, but we have a lot of things like that in the Silicon Valley. Tell us a little more about the food. How different from Thai food or Vietnamese food?
Some of the similar dishes, the sort of salad rolls and spring rolls and things like that, but a lot of things that are just specifically Khmer as well, and a lot of different hot pot type dishes, and just some great settings to eat them in there in Siem Reap as well.
And your favorite food that you tried there?
I don't remember a favorite dish specifically. I do remember my wife at one point trying pig brain, which was certainly the most unusual thing that we tried anywhere along the way.
All right.
Which she tells me was very good. It was one of the few things along the way that I didn't try. But I do remember one great restaurant we ate at. It was a place called Green Mango, where you could sort of sit out under the stars, and I think it was about $4 or $5 together with beer and a meal for both of us, and just tremendous Cambodian food.
For both of you, okay. Wow, okay. That also gives us an idea on prices then. So I see why they do get a lot of backpackers, as you talked about.
Absolutely. But one thing that you saw in Siem Reap, certainly throughout Cambodia, you see a lot of backpackers and a lot in Siem Reap as well, but you also get a lot of people coming in for just these big sort of resort spa complexes that they have there, coming in on package tours from Japan and from the Philippines, China, destinations all around Asia, to these really impressive luxury resorts that they've got there.
And you did preparation before you went. What did the guidebooks recommend you thought was a waste of time?
Geez, that's a good question. I don't know if there was a lot that was a waste of time out of the guidebooks. I think going into a place like Cambodia or Laos, the more research you do, the better. You really want to know what you're getting into. Maybe the guidebooks scared you a little bit too much because they talk about some of the trouble that travelers run into in countries like that. We just found people so friendly and had such a good experience on our trip that the reality didn't match up with some of the expectations going in, for sure.
And what do you think that they left out? What guidebooks were you using, first of all? We should have asked that earlier.
We used the Lonely Planet guidebook, mostly. Okay. And
I just assumed it, actually.
The interesting thing was there's a guy, I don't know if he's still on the front cover of the Lonely Planet guidebook. I imagine they change out their pictures every year. But the front cover was the picture of this guy who was sort of the caretaker at one of the main temples in the Angkor Wat complex.
Oh, okay.
As we were walking through the temples, we actually ran into him and got to sit down and chat with him for a while. So that was interesting.
Interesting.
But the other thing we relied on a lot was websites. We brought a laptop with us when we were traveling, and we're fortunate in that most of the hotels we were staying at, we had access to high-speed internet. So we normally wouldn't book anything more than sort of 24 hours out. We would pick the next destination we wanted to go based on recommendations we'd heard from people, get online and find the next neat hotel that we wanted to go check out, and away we would go from there.
So you were talking to a lot of travelers who were just coming in the other direction from you, for instance.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. And we found some really great websites that are really inexpensive in terms of booking hotels. We found in Southeast Asia that there were sort of different categories of hotels. A lot of backpackers staying in the sort of $10 to $15 a night guest houses. Mm-hmm. And a lot of package travelers on sort of prepackaged tours staying in places for $100 to $200 a night. And that if you got onto a lot of the Asian websites, you could get into those $200 a night hotels for $30 or $40 a night by booking them online and booking them quite close to when you were going to arrive.
Interesting. It's funny that you're talking about that strategy. When we did the very first Round the World episode way back in season one of The Amateur Traveler, the couple that we had on talked about how the people who are traveling around the world west to east would use the people traveling east to west as a resource. And they
absolutely.
So
yeah.
It's definitely a useful strategy to know.
For sure.
What do you wish you'd known?
I guess I wish I'd known how much there was to see and do in Cambodia. I mean, we probably would have set aside more time on our trip, both for Cambodia and Laos. They were both places that we just sort of tacked onto our trip with a few weeks in each. Going back in retrospect now, two places that I wish we would have spent more time. They were less expensive than a lot of other destinations, and they were a lot easier to travel around than I thought. I mean, I expected going into a place like Laos, for example, that we wouldn't have internet access for a few days, and instead found out that we had high-speed wireless access in our room every day and beautiful hotels.
I think you may have already mentioned your worst day in Cambodia, I'm guessing, was the getting in. Is that the case, first of all?
Absolutely. That had to be it.
Best day.
Best day had to be getting up on our first day arriving in Siem Reap. We got up at about 4:30, 5 in the morning, and went out and found a brilliant guide, a guy by the name of Mr. Tep, who, if you're walking around the streets of Siem Reap and happen to find him, the friendliest guy who we came across, who we hired for the day, really sticks in my mind. is as the sun was rising, it's sort of 5:36 in the morning, coming into the Angkor Wat complex, and you could smell jasmine all around you, all the jasmine flowers sort of blooming in the morning. There were monkeys all around us, people on elephant going back beside us, and both of us just sort of with our feet up and our friendly guide taking us from site to site, and it was a phenomenal day.
Excellent. As we wrap this up, is there anything else that you would want to give somebody as advice for heading to Cambodia?
I guess my one piece of advice would be not to go on a prepackaged tour, to spend the time doing some research yourself. First of all, I think you'll save yourself a lot of money by doing some of your bookings for hotels and things online. It's really easy to find guides on the ground once you get there. That's one of the things we were a bit worried about, is a lot of travel agents before you go there will try and book you on a package where you've got a tour guide who will take you through the whole time. And
sure,
it's just so easy when you arrive. And it was the same anywhere in Cambodia, not just Siem Reap, and Phnom Penh was the same way, where it's very easy to turn up and find people who can help you out and help you tour around. A lot more inexpensive than we expected it would be, and a lot more inexpensive than it would have been booking a prepackaged tour, for sure.
And actually, you mentioned other places in Cambodia. We kind of stopped the story at Siem Reap. We got distracted here. You went to Phnom Penh as well.
Phnom Penh, which is the capital, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting place as well. A much different part of the trip than Siem Reap.
Sure.
One of the things we did when we were in Phnom Penh, you know, Cambodia is really still a country that's reemerging from a terrible civil war that happened
right
there. A country of 7 million people, where 2 to 3 million of those people were killed over a period of 10 or 15 years by the Pol Pot regime and the Khmer Rouge when they controlled the country. In Phnom Penh, you really see the impacts of that still. There's a museum that sort of everyone goes through when you arrive, the S-21 Museum. It's an old schoolhouse that was essentially a torture center during the Khmer Rouge regime. And it's like going and touring one of the Holocaust monuments in Europe or something like that. I mean, it's really seeing some of the worst of humanity, and a pretty sobering place to go tour through.
Any other places you went in Cambodia?
No, that was really about it. Okay. Just Siem Reap and Phnom Penh.
Okay. Unless you have any other last comments.
I have one good story. I don't know how to work it in, but
go ahead.
I'll tell you the story anyway. You can see where it fits in. Is, you know, one of the interesting things that happened when we were there was you see all these kids around Siem Reap that, because of the booming tourist trade there, have poured into the area in recent years. And some of them, I mean, really young, 4 or 5 year old children who are there who speak perfect English just because of their interactions with tourists trying to work as guides or trying to sell them things when you arrive. And one of the mornings arriving at the Angkor Wat temple complex, we had gone in to watch the sunrise at one of the temples, and we were there early in the morning. We were one of the first sets of tourists to arrive, and there are all these young children there, all who speak perfect English, and one really small young Cambodian child who came up to us and asked us if he could cook us breakfast. We were polite to him, but said, you know, I'm sorry, we already made breakfast back in our room, but thanks very much. And without missing a beat, he turned to us and said, you made me breakfast, but you can't make a postcard, can you? And then whipped out his whole portfolio of postcards that he had available, and guidebooks and everything else that he had there as well.
And these were knockoffs? Like,
yeah, that's right. He had every Lonely Planet guidebook you can imagine from around Southeast Asia, but all sort of knockoff versions for $4 or $5, and postcards and trinkets and everything else.
Funny. Actually, one question. You had mentioned that your wife is a published photographer, which I was very jealous of. Best picture, favorite picture that really captures the trip for you?
Some of the best ones really did come from Angkor Wat. I mean, some of the ones from that morning, the sunrise over the temples. There's one, I'm trying to think if I can still find it now, but it was a great picture of all these Buddhist monks who are there as tourists visiting the temples. And you always think of Buddhist monks of being very serious and austere, and all of them were there, first of all, I mean, having a great time, sort of laughing and joking, but all on cell phones as well. And it was a strange thing to see in the middle of rural Cambodia, all these Buddhist monks in ancient temples all talking to people on cell phones. But a great picture of it.
Well, David, thanks so much for coming on the show. And one more time, the URL that they can find your podcast.
It's at www.travelin10.com.
Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
In the Internet Resources portion of our show today, I have one resource for you. If you're going someplace far away like Cambodia and you're making a big trip, one thing you may think about is trip insurance. And one website you might check out is insuremytrip.com. And the reason I recommend this one, I haven't actually used it, so let's be clear on that. But it is an aggregator, so you'll put in information about your trip, how far you're going, what kind of coverage you're looking for, how old you are, and it will get you quotes rates from a number of different places than you can then look at in detail. So insuremytrip.com, and don't forget trip insurance when appropriate. Now, I'm going to guess from the fact that you're listening to this show and you're still listening over 24 minutes into it that you are interested in travel. I'm going to start thinking about some homework assignments here in the community section of this show. And so one thing I would like you to think about is, first of all, if you have a great desire for travel and you're not getting around to traveling, is let's start with a budget. Let's start with figuring out how to save money for travel. And probably the first thing that means is getting out of any short-term debt that you're in. So your homework assignment is to look at your budget and see whether you can make room for travel, and you might have to get rid of some other things first. You may have noticed before that in this show, as well as in several others, movie references come up. And I am, in fact, a big movie buff, and so I have opened up a new blog, which is Movie and TV Reviews, which is madaboutmovies.tv, so you might want to check that out. And yes, for those of you scoring at home, that is my fifth website to go along with my three podcasts. And the list of all of those is on the website at amateurtraveler.com. To promote one of the websites, tripinator.com, which is my travel blog, I am doing a contest. If you subscribe to the blog via email, which is on the right sidebar for that blog, and you're a subscriber at the end of March, I'm going to choose someone at random and send them an Amateur Traveler travel poster, which is available from my online store. It looks like I may be taking a business trip to Atlanta in a couple weeks, if there's anybody in that area who's interested in getting together sometime on the evening, I think, of the 17th of March. Just let me know. Drop me an email. And lastly, just so that everything in this section of the show isn't an announcement, I got an email from Stephanie. And Stephanie wrote about the podcast with Pauline Frommer on it. Your last podcast with Pauline Frommer was very helpful. My family lives in Ohio, but both of my parents are from the East Coast, so we are often back in New York City for family occasions and annual trips. My family has gotten a lot bigger as we get older, so the summer when some of us make our way back to the city for a wedding, we will have to spread out into various lodging locations. My mother, who has a friend whose convent offers spare apartments for only $75 per night per person right in the city, so we are already familiar with staying at lodging like this. So I think Pauline Frommer's suggestion for the Leo House and the House of the Redeemer may be a great option. I have already emailed my mother with the details and hope she is able to utilize these great tips. Thanks again. Stephanie's always nice to know that the show is actually sometimes useful, and I swear it's entirely accidental. With that, I think we'll wrap up this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you want to get a hold of me, the new comment line is 917-720-2583. Remember, if you go to the contact page and click a button, I'll have you call it back for free. You don't even need to make a long-distance call, at least from the U.S., as far as I know. Or drop me an email at host@theamateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
See one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.